It's time for Let's Talk Money.
Good afternoon, Chattanooga. You're listening to Let's Talk Money with Jim Place and Jamie O'Donnell. 267-1023 is our number. We start our market day. Dow Jones average sits at 32,230 points. S&P at 4,018 points, down 5. With me this afternoon, co-hosted today, Amy Boll-Werber, Shabbos and Bonner. Amy, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Good. Max, how about yourself, sir?
Well, my computer's been giving me problems, but I fixed it. I took the oil can, put a little oil in it.
Oh, I'm sure that helped.
Yeah, oh, it's rather much better.
Nothing like greasing up a computer to help it out, right?
Fix it right up.
I usually just yell at mine.
If yelling would fix it, we'd have...
Hey, you know,
a long time ago.
You know, the truth is, Max, when it comes to that stuff, I have one skill, reboot. If reboot doesn't work, it's over. I do know this when it comes to computer. WD-40 does not help.
Oh, no. I may have to buy a new computer.
Yeah, you might indeed if you've oiled that baby
up. Or find a teenager to help you.
That's the truth.
All right. Jerry was here, and I think he went to lunch, so I'm waiting on him to get back and tell me what to do.
All right, Amy, tell people what you do.
I am a geriatric and special needs social worker, and I work with the elder law team at Shambliss. And I do care coordination, advocacy, education, holding hands when folks need to figure out how to navigate through some of the difficult systems, healthcare. Insurance and issues of aging and disability.
You know, it's interesting because, I mean, we brought this up before when you came on the show, but I think it's worth making the point again. It is very unusual for a good-sized law firm to hire a peer social worker.
Yes. So it's an interesting thing. I've been there 6 years now, which is, I still call it my new job, but really what happened was, our team understood that they were doing, you know, documents, powers of attorney, estate documents, all of those kinds of things, but which are critically important in terms of your planning. But then they were getting phone calls from families saying, okay, now I have the power of attorney.
What do I do?
What do I do with my mother?
Yeah.
And that was a skill set that was a little bit different than...
Well, actually a lot different.
Yes, a lot different.
Actually a lot different because, I mean, and as we were talking before the show started, you're dealing with a variety of different, either private and or governmental systems, all of them with a different modus operandi. Very difficult to understand. And, you know, if you really think about it, if I think about the amount of people, the different types of people you deal with elderly and elder care problems, you deal with disability and disability-related issues. You dealt with, certainly as a social worker, to some extent today, people that just don't have money.
Yes.
I mean, you could say broke, don't have money, don't know how to get around the system, but don't have the dollars and cents to get to the people that can make a difference. And then you deal with, I could use the term financially less than literate, but it sounds negative. You deal with people that don't know.
Yeah.
Just the unknown.
Well, and, you know, I think there are so many things that are happening now, you know. Right now, there are more Americans over the age of 60 than there are age 18. We have entered into a period of time where people are living so much longer that, you know, I talk about folks not in terms of their age, but in terms of their abilities. I work with go-go's, slow-go's, and no-go's. You can be a no-go in your 60s and a go-go in your 80s, but the reality of it is that there are things that happen as people age, but there are also circumstances that change. And, you know, if you expected to, you know, I think about my grandmother who, you know, started getting her Social Security at 65 and she passed away at 96. I mean, that was not expected to be a system that was going to, you know, pay out for that amount of time. And then what kind of care do you need? What kind of services are out there? And really, understanding, you know, the balance of, you know, quantity of life versus quality of life, what kind of services there are, and how to navigate them. The The interesting thing about my background and why it fits in with this particular position is that early in my career, when I was first out of graduate school, I worked with people with disabilities, accessing community-based services and things like that in a small nonprofit. And then I moved into working with aging, but many of the issues are the same. Independence, housing, transportation, community involvement, care, you know, all of those things are very similar. And so in estate planning and elder law and special needs law, a lot of the planning is also similar in terms of the benefits that are out there, in terms of aging parents maybe taking care of adult children with disabilities and trying to kind of navigate all those things. So that I had that unique base and background, and I have worked in healthcare settings. So I tell people that I speak the language, and there are specific languages to these kinds of services that are out there, just like the lawyers speak lawyerlish, you know, I speak, you know. And so I kind of am able to help people understand, like, this is how this goes and this is what it's going to be.
Well, in fairness, aging is a disability.
No. Aging is not a disability.
You get old
it's
enough,
it is.
It's
not a diagnosis.
Yeah, well.
Okay, listen.
Maybe aging, not medically, but let me tell you, it is somewhat of a disability.
Well, yes. Yeah, okay. Things do happen to you as you age. There are definitely changes in your body as you age, and that is for sure. But aging, you know, is not a diagnosis.
No, it is not.
And so, you know, when somebody says, I had a client say to me, this was really funny. He went to his doctor, he's in his 80s, his knee was really hurting him. The doctor said to him, well, what do you expect? You're 80 years old, you know, that's your... The guy says to him, listen, the other knee is the same age, and it doesn't feel the same. And I said, yes. So it's really looking at the individual and what they need and what they want and giving them, you know, helping them to plan and not be in crisis.
Well, let's start with disability for just a minute. Variety of different issues. We're talking about types of disabilities. We're talking about childhood disabilities. I mean, there's a pretty big spectrum here as to where you go. Number one would be some level of diagnosis of understanding what type of disability are we really dealing with. You were talking before the show where there was a brain injury, but it was only being diagnosed as something that in essence it wasn't. It wasn't being treated correctly. So first is assessing what it is we have and what is potentially available.
Right. Well, and that, it's interesting. So we were seeing in our practice a lot of elderly parents of adult children with disabilities who then the elders were starting to, you know, need help and, you know, having need services and things.
And no longer be able to
care for their adult child. And then really, you know, kind of, like, what do we do? And then we're in a crisis, right? Something happens to mom, she breaks her hip, and suddenly we're in a crisis. And so I will tell you, being the parent of a child with a disability, that from the moment your child is either born with or acquires a disability, you worry as a parent, what will happen if I am not able to do whatever it is?
Whether it was to be here or
financially or services or... whatever. That is particularly for people who have, you know, very, you know, involved or, you know, involved disabilities with a variety of different things going on. So one of the things that I think is crucial is we have really started working with younger families, helping them understand what are the planning things that you need to do in order to get some peace of mind, at least, you know, well, what is it going to look like if something happens to me as a parent? What kind of benefits will my child be available to them? You know, there are kind of breaking points. There's a point where it can be, you know, at 18, like, for instance, a child with a developmental disability, intellectual disability, at 18 in the state of Tennessee and everywhere else in the U.S., you are considered an adult. this parent may have been making all decisions for that child from the, you know, from their whole lives, but at 18, they no longer have the legal right to do this. So that's where we have to start talking about, well, does this child need conservatorship? Do they need a power of attorney? What kinds of things do we need to do? Do we need to plan financially? What kind of...
Because once the child's classified as an adult, they may qualify for benefits that we would not have otherwise received when they were considered a minor as somebody that had economic wherewithal.
Yes, yes. What kind of, not only the financial piece, but what kind of services are out there? And there are different kinds of services. So it is trying to understand, you know, how these different systems work. And then what can we do? My goal is always to help people be as independent and active as possible, understanding that there may be things that impact that. And so how do we wrap those services around folks and have them understand what the process is? If you know about the process when the child is, you know, five, that probably you're going to have to do conservatorship, then you can start putting money away to know that that's going to be a legal process, it's going to cost this amount of money, and that's what I'm going to need to do. So I'm very interested. I've been doing a lot of educating at, you know, at support groups and, you know, special ed classrooms and things like that, just to help people understand what the services are.
267-1023, Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money. Talk Radio 102.3.
You're back with Let's Talk Money, 267-1023. With me this afternoon, Amy Bulwer from Chambliss, Bonner & Stoffel. Amy, how do people get a hold of you?
Easy. You just give me a call at 423-321-0403 or A. Bulwer, B-O-U-L-W-A-R-E, at chambliss.com.
Let me ask you this. You were talking about disability for just a second. The other thing that can happen, that I understand can happen with an 18-year-old that's now considered a legal adult in the state of Tennessee, that person may not have previously qualified for Medicaid.
Definitely, yeah, for
sure. I mean, in essence, there were a portion of their family's, quote, financial records and economic wherewithal, but now as an adult with no sources of income, the type, not so much the types of care that they might receive, but how it gets compensated and paid for could be completely different as an adult than it would be as a...
Yes, that's absolutely true. And the thing to know about that is that there are, and a lot of times people will say, so there's many ways to look at this, but there are sometimes people will say, well, I would never want my child on Medicaid. You know, that's you know, low-income benefits. The thing to understand is that there are services that are out there for individuals with disabilities that you cannot buy into even if you wanted to. So that being said, they are funded by the Medicaid, you know, they're paid for by the Medicaid system. And so, you know, what I always say is let's look at all of the services that are available. If there is additional money, then we set up something called, you know, a supplemental needs trust, and that supplements what the public benefits are. You don't want to leave money on the table, particularly when you know that somebody may or may not be able to work, or they have a limited work, you know, not able to work full time.
Well, you can also end up in a situation where... this adult child continues to live with you between age 18 and age 40.
Yes.
You're now
yes.
65 years of age. During that 20-year period of time, I needed to be able to accumulate wealth and put it in a special needs trust for the benefit of that child
right.
when I'm gone.
Right.
Yet I don't want that money in their name because it allows them not to qualify
yes.
for certain
yes.
things. So how you channel those dollars and cents. And if I'm paying for services where I should be saving money for the trust when the services were otherwise available, that doesn't end well because either there's going to be less money in the trust to take care of that adult child at 55 or 60 years of age when it could have been moving in a different channel.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So it's a very specific kind of planning because it's important to understand that you want to do, you know, you want to put together all of the pieces so that this, you know, adult child who will need whatever they will need, you know, then you're able to use the benefits they're eligible for, as well as, you know, there is something called a childhood disability benefit, that if a child has had a disability where they're not able to work a certain amount before the age of 22, they are able to draw off of their parents' work record for Social Security benefits. And so understanding how that works, you know, if you have a parent who's has a professional job, high net worth, when they take their Social Security, then this child, this adult child who's been disabled, before 22, is able to draw off of the parents' work record, get Medicare sooner.
And how many people do you know that just didn't?
A lot of people just don't know.
All of a sudden, that adult child's 30 years of age, and they never drew off that, and nobody ever told them they
could. That's right.
It's just not being aware of what's
out there. And it's not an automatic unless you have to apply for this.
Yeah, let me go down a different road for a minute.
Sure.
Talk to me about the plight of the adult caregiver.
Hmm. Well, the plight of the adult caregiver.
This is the adult caregiver normally giving care to elderly parents in this case.
Yes, yes. So,
because they're in for a ride too, aren't they?
So it's very interesting. You know, when we talk about it takes a village and those kinds of things, it used to be pretty much everybody. You might have gone away to school or something, but you came back. You lived in the same town as your family. There was a close proximity. People just kind of expected that, you know, you would take care of grandma or however, and in many families, that's kind of how it was. Now, we see that, you know, people are scattered all over the country. I mean, my personal family, for example, I have a brother in Texas, a sister in Kansas, and I live in Chattanooga. My parents and my grandmother chose to retire in Chattanooga, where their own personal geriatric social worker lived. But the reality of it is that it is often one family member, most often the adult daughter, who is the caregiver of aging family members and parents. And they're also trying to work. They're also trying to, you know, manage their own children and their own lives. And it can be extremely stressful. I had somebody tell me the other day that, you know, their social life was, you know, going to doctor's appointments with their moms and funerals. You know, it's like, that is not a good thing. And what happens is that often the caregiving becomes about tasks and less about actual interaction and community care. We're dealing with this in my own family with my mother-in-law who lives in rural Oklahoma. And she had a terrible fall and she lives out on a farm with chickens and all that kind of stuff. And my sister-in-law called and said, you got to come. You got to help us figure this out, Amy. You know, now the good thing was they happened to have somebody in the family who knows how to do that, how to navigate. But it was very complicated. And she wanted to go back home. You know, she wanted to go home. But she is home. But there's a lot of pressure on trying to, you know, care for folks who may or may not be making good choices, who may or may not have cognitive impairments, who may, you know, I'll tell you, my mother-in-law, I've been begging her to get a lifeline, begging her. My husband and I will pay for it. I'll do all the navigation. I'll do everything. We'll get it for you. She said, I'm not going to wear it. I keep my phone with me all the time. There's no reason to wear it. I knew just based on her outside area and what she does, she was likely going to fall. She has arthritis. She has all these things. And of course,
she didn't have her phone with her.
She didn't have her phone with her. The ball of her hip completely broke off in this terrible fall. And she dragged herself across her deck in 19-degree weather into the house. and then laid there for 4 hours until my 16-year-old niece, who happened to be home on a snow day, came to check on her. Because what would a 16-year-old do when there's a snow day? Sleep.
Yes.
So the reality, and she said to me, she really did. She said to me, "Amy, I heard your voice in my head." And I said, "What did I say? Was I nice?" And she said, "You had a very nice voice. And you said, boy, this might have been a good time to have that lifeline, to have listened to me and had that lifeline."
You know, the other thing that I've seen, too, and I think many people are aware of this, they've seen it with their elderly parents, I talk about the adult child that's a caregiver, and as you said, it tends to be the oldest female in the family. The other kind of caregiver I see is the 84-year-old trying to give care to the 85-year-old that is their spouse.
Yes.
And you see the caregiver literally, physically destroying themselves.
Falling apart, yes.
Completely falling apart. And God forbid the caregiver in that situation dies first.
Often
it happens more. But in essence, the burden that it puts on that person, that for all intent and purpose, their life is virtually over. And it's a little bit of what I kind of call the Joan of Arc syndrome. They've gotten used to burning themselves at the stake, and they're really not seeking the help for their own level of sanity and well-being.
Well, there's, you know, of course, the more work I do in this field, the more I know that, you know, many things go back to family dynamics. They go back to, you know, your family of origin. I see, you know, adult children who say things, you know, "Well, you stepped on my foot when we were, you know, 15. I was like, "What, are you kidding me?" But the reality of it is that, you know, people are allowed to make bad choices. Okay, that is a fact. You can make a bad choice, but then you have to say, okay, what are the consequences of that bad choice, and how do we go about it,
or how do we reassess it at this point in time,
and how do we decide how we go forward? I am a big proponent of, you know, what does quality of life look like for, you know, for me? What are the things that are important to me in order to have, you know, have that quality? And I've had that conversation with my mother-in-law. I said, "Look, there's calculated risks. You live out on a farm. You take chickens in and out every day. You want to be planting in your garden. You want to do all these things. I totally get that. I want you to do those things. But let's figure out how are we going to make those as safe as possible. And if an emergency happens, then how are we going
to
deal with it?"
Now, there's a case where you are listening to her. You're not trying to completely change the quality of her life, and not, because there's people out there that are trying to force, you know, round hole and square peg.
Right.
They're trying to force people to do things they absolutely don't want to do within the framework. It's, you're destroying their quality of life by you pushing on them what you think it ought to be.
Well, and I used to think, early in my career, I was like, safety, safety, safety. It's all about, you know. But what I've learned as I've, you know, kind of progressed in this, I mean, people can fall anywhere. You can have, you know, things can happen anywhere and any time. It's how are you going to deal with it, and what kinds of things are you going to accept? You know, I talk about this term that I've coined called malicious independence. And it's the desire to remain independent is so strong that you're willing to do things that in the past you would have said, "That's crazy. Why would I put myself in that position?" But because you're so fearful of losing your independence, that you're willing to do things. And what we have to figure out is, what are the supports that people need around them so that they're still able to have some level of independence while at the same time not taking risks that are just, you know, out there, crazy risks.
267-1023, let's talk money.
Let's talk money. Talk Radio 2.3.
You're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. Max, kill the music. Thank you. To the phone lines. Hi, Carol. How are you? Carol?
Myself in the position, I live here in Chattanooga, but I am the primary caregiver or responsible for an aunt and an uncle who are 96 and 99 in Miami. They live together in Miami, and I find that I've got private caregivers that are coming in, not through an agency, but how do I find the types of services they need? I feel like there's home health-type services that I'm not taking advantage of. We've gone to their primary doctor, and they kind of run you to a physical therapist, but it'd be nice for somebody that knows what services are available. They have the ability to pay. I'd rather not if I don't have to.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Okay,
so there are several ways.
Thanks for that question.
That's a great question. So there are several areas.
Let me stop you there. You got two things. Very old couple.
Yes.
Quite a distance away from the primary caregiver that lives in Chattanooga, and we're talking about Miami, Florida.
Yes. So a couple of things you need to know. First off, I would suggest contacting the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities in their county. Every county has that service. And so it's called the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities. They will be able to connect you with local resources. They have an information and referral hotline, basically, that so you can just, you know, Google that for their county. That will be a, you know, beginning phase. There are also people like me who are geriatric care managers. There's a group called the Elder Life Care Management Service. You can give me a call and I can connect you with them.
And give her that number again.
423-321-0403. Another thing that I think is highly underused but should be discussed is getting an in-home evaluation by palliative or hospice care at the stage that they are, 99. There are home visiting doctors that will come out, geriatric home visiting doctors that charge Medicare, and they then see the individual in the setting where they're living and can help more with, you know, kind of symptom control, quality end-of-life care, rather than, you know, being aggressive necessarily. You know, they may keep offering physical therapy, but maybe aggressive physical therapy isn't what the 99-year-old can really do. So I always want to get that kind of evaluation done. And most communities have that piece of geriatrician, somebody who work specifically with elders. And because a lot of times, I mean, the largest amount of money that is spent with Medicare is usually in the last 18 months of somebody's life. And often it does not give them quality. So, you know, what you need is somebody with the, you know, feet on the ground there who can be an advisor to you and say, and I do this for folks I work with a lot of adult children or family members who have somebody out of town.
Well, she needs you in Miami.
Know? Yeah, you need somebody like me in Miami. And there's certainly, it's the Aging Life Care Association. They are certified folks who you can look up and see, you know, and get somebody like that, because, you know, that way you have an advocate as well as your family members have an advocate.
You know, and the truth is, now some may be a little bit better, some may be not quite as good, let's say, at what you do. But a majority of the people that are certified in the areas that you're talking about are going to know the baseline protocols.
Yes, absolutely.
They're going to know the baseline protocols, and they're going to give Carol that called here, she's going to know a lot more a week from now following up with two or three organizations of this manner that are based in Miami.
Yes.
And 30 days later, she, in her role as the faraway caregiver, she's going to be able to provide levels of assistance that she didn't necessarily know existed.
That's exactly right. Exactly. And I think that you need somebody who can help you understand what are the services and what do they really need, And then, you know, go from there. They may be eligible for home delivered meals, or they may be eligible for, you know, who knows what it is. And you want to get them as many, you know, wraparound services as you possibly can.
Do you mind, this it's off the subject a little bit, will you tell us, do you mind telling the story about your dad?
No, I'd be happy to.
Because, I mean, this is, if you're the caregiver, yes, there's certain things you know need to be done, but one of the things that needs to be done is you need to listen to the person who you are getting the care for.
Absolutely. So I was just telling Jim a story. My dad is close to 86, 85 and a half, and he, just a couple of weeks ago, was having chest pain. He has had a heart attack in the past. He's had stents, all that. But he's extremely active. And I happened to be working from home that morning, and he just said, you know, I'm having chest pains. I said, we're calling 911. We got the ambulance there, you know, right into the emergency room. If you say you're having chest pains, man, it's fast. So they did, you know, a bunch of tests. They admitted him to the hospital, kept him overnight for a stress test. And there were conversations from everything from, you know, is he going to need open heart surgery, to is he going to need another stent? Is he going to need nothing? We went kind of up and down the band. And then it was determined that they were going to, it was a heart incident, but they were going to monitor it. And the doctor came in and said, you know, we're going to go ahead and discharge you. And it was a Tuesday, and my dad happens to have a group of folks that he goes out every Tuesday night for Taco Tuesday. And my dad says, okay, well, if you're going to discharge me, I'm feeling better now. You know, they'd given him medicine and things. He said, go ahead and get it done already. I want to go to Taco Tuesday. And the doctor looked at me and he looked at my dad and he said, listen, we've have you on a cardiac diet and all this. And I said to the doctor, here's the deal. This man has been eating whatever he wants for a very long time. He goes every Tuesday to Taco Tuesday with his buddies, and we're not going to stop that. That's what he wants to do. So you need to finish the paperwork, and I'm taking him to Taco Tuesday from the hospital. And the doctor looked at me like I was like, what? And I said, that's quality of life for him. His friends are waiting for him. So that's exactly what we did. We got him discharged, and I drove him over to Taco Tuesday with his buddies. And, you know, quality of life and being able to make choices about things like that may not be exactly what, you know, maybe the medical thing or the strict thing. But at a certain point in your life, you know, at 86, it's really about, you know, what do you want to do and what are you able to do? And figuring out, you know, there are calculated risks. There are calculated risks with everything. But listening to what the individual wants and trying to do it in a safe and supported way. Now, I'll tell you, he didn't drive himself that day. He didn't drive himself home that day.
Well, you were talking about your mother-in-law that had the fall.
Exactly.
I mean, in essence, she needed the life care button.
Yes.
And she could have been comfortable living with the risk of being on the farm, but being on the farm and then not carrying the life care button created a life-threatening situation where you weren't interested in taking the farm away or her away from the farm, but if she needed help because of a potential risk that was there that was fairly predictable.
Yes, yes.
She just refused.
Yes.
To
and guess
for
what
that.
She's wearing now?
She's wearing the
baby,
button.
But you know what? She's wearing something cooler. She's wearing an iWatch, which is able to, you know, communicate and all that. So it's a little cooler than the pendant.
267-1023. Let's talk money.
Let's talk money. Talk radio 102.3.
You're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. Amy, let me ask you this. First, talk about the program you guys have got coming up.
Okay, so we are super excited. Tuesday, June the 28th from 9 to 2 at the Westin Chattanooga, we are hosting live this year our Embrace Aging Forum. We have done this for a number of years, and unfortunately the pandemic stopped us from doing it for a little bit. But it is, we are going to be discussing topics from housing, healthcare, relationships, wellness, financial, legal planning, and more. We have a great keynote speaker. Her name is Tembi Locke. She was the primary caretaker for her husband and navigating his passing. She is actually an actress and author, and they're creating a Netflix show about their story. But she has a lot of insight into what it was like caring for her husband.
She got
as
a hell
he
of a
dying.
Resume, too. I read it.
Yeah.
I mean, she's probably done 300 different episodes of every kind of TV show you could think of.
Yeah. So we're excited about her coming. We're going to have breakout sessions, exhibitors. It's only $55 a ticket. And registration and admission include a light breakfast, breakout sessions, you know, all of that, lunch. And you can find tickets and info at embraceagingforum.com. Or you can look at our website, Shambliss Law, C-H-A-M-B-L-I-S-S, law, L-A-W.com. And we really are hoping for a really nice crowd. This year, we have always had folks be very happy with the things that they learned.
We've participated, I think, 3 or 4 times inside of this program with you all. It's excellent.
Thank you.
I mean, from a knowledge standpoint, depending on what it is you're looking for, there are probably going to be 15 or 20 different areas that you potentially would be exposed to. You're going to gravitate towards the things that are important to you at a particular point in time or whatever challenges you may be having or your family may be having in their life. But it's a day well spent.
You know, the thing is, Jim, we have there are only 2 things that are sure on this. You are either going to die young or you're going to age. That's it. I mean, as far as I know, there's no in between. You either die young or you get older. And the reality of it is how we age and what our expectations are. And I will tell you that there is a difference in the expectation of what maybe the, you know, folks who are in their 90s, 80s and 90s now versus the baby boomers, you know, versus me who just turned 55 and what I expect for my aging story to look like. And, you know, I think it's important to have the conversation rather than wait for some crisis.
Well, the other thing I would tell people out there, there's so many subjects that we didn't touch on today at all. I mean, if you're turning 65 years of age, Amy's helped a lot of our clients just walk through the Medicare, through the what kind of supplemental policy, what kind of Part D policies out there. But if you've got a situation that in some way, shape, or form requires somebody's capacity or an ability to navigate a fairly complex level of governmental systems, you're an individual that can do that for people locally. There are other people in other parts of the country talking about Carol and her family in Miami or whatever it would be. But if you need a roadmap, this woman can draw a roadmap that helps you get from point A to point B. And that's what people are looking for.
And I think that, you know, one of the things that people like is that, you know, I am straight up honest. I'm not going to give you a bunch of, you know, mumbo jumbo. We're just going to really tell it like it is.
Amy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Dave Ramsey, The Ramsey Show, coming up right now from 1 to 3, 3 to 7, 4 Talk. You have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.